You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
There's a very specific reason we're playing some Proud Mary. Everybody in the world has to have a walk-up song. And Proud Mary is my good friend Janae Willer's walk-up song. And you were on this program with us. It's been 2 years.
Yes.
And you and I have kept in touch and remind people what is about to happen as local pilots are set to compete in a 2,700-mile all-women cross-country airplane race.
Hi, Dana. It is so great to be here. And yes, I'm going to be heading to the race this week. They've got to do plane inspections. They'll go up in my plane, check it all out. The actual race starts 1 week from today.
We had our listeners follow you the entire time last time.
And you can send me messages. And I love you, Dana's listeners. You were great last time. You would send me messages of encouragement. And it was super. And we'll give you that link later in the program.
So remind me, this is your fifth last race. And I laughed out loud when you said, because you always say, I'm going to retire. This is the last race. This is your fifth last race.
Right. I have flown, this will be my 11th national or international air race. But in 2019, there was a race through the U.S. and Canada. And I said, told my husband, because I hadn't raced for a while, I said, I got to race one last time. I've never raced through Canada. I've raced through the Caribbean, raced through Mexico. I've never raced through Canada. I said, this will be my last race. So I raced in 2019. And then, of course, I got the bug again. Yep. And then the race stopped for a couple years for COVID. And then I thought, I better race. I own an airplane. What am I doing? If I got an airplane, I'm not racing. I mean, become a, you know, old grandma sitting at home.
You are definitely not that, Janae. I want to remind everybody, you are, for those of you who don't know, and we have people all over the world listening to this interview right now, because the pilot community is a tight-knit community, and you are a well-known Lee's Summit pilot. You are a flight instructor. This is the 49th Air Race Classic, and by the way, it is the oldest airplane race of its kind in the entire United States. 100 women pilots, 46 teams, 9 stops, 2,700 miles. How does it work?
Well, the way it works is everybody goes up with like a check pilot and you handicap your plane so that different types of aircraft can race against each other. There are 4 days. We can only fly in the daytime. Okay. And we can only fly in relatively good weather. There are 9 cities across the country that we have to fly by at 200 to 400 feet, full throttle. It's full throttle air race. And once we get our time, we can stop at that city, we can stay overnight, we can refuel, get some lunch, take a look at the weather. But we have from Tuesday morning until 5 o'clock Friday to finish the 2,700 miles. So theoretically, the faster planes might get done in 3 days, the slower planes might get done in 4 days. But if they do better than their handicap, they might actually beat us. So
there are 9 legs to this journey. Tell people where you're going to be flying this time.
Okay, we're going to fly all through the Midwest. It actually starts and ends in Illinois, believe it or not, over by St. Louis. It's called West looks Alton,
like a,
Illinois.
Almost looks like a Pentagon.
Oh, yeah. So it's really a pretty good route. The only mountains we have to cross are the Smokies, which are not real high. Last year, crossed the Rockies. Mm-hmm. So this year, I'm going to be taking some oxygen with me just in case we decide we can get better winds up high, because the strategies are what time of day do you fly, what headwinds do you have, what tailwinds do you have, what's the best time to do this? Do I want to wait till tomorrow and try to do more legs tomorrow than today? So there's a whole lot of different strategies that people employ to try to win.
So tell me about your mama. For those people who do not, I love this story. You were actually taught to fly by your mother over 50 years ago. So think about what did the United States look like 50 years ago? Your mother was a pilot. She wasn't a secretary. Right. She wasn't a nurse. Those were noble professions. But that was rare.
That was very, very unusual. And she was actually an old Powder Puff Derby pilot. Before the Air Race Classic, they had a longtime women's air race called the Powder Puff Derby. It was always transcontinental, west coast to east coast, because that's the way the winds went. And everybody just knew they flew east. There was no GPS, none of that stuff. Nope. She taught me to fly and took me on my first international air race in 1973. It went through Mexico and up through the United States. And then I went as her co-pilot as a very, very low private pilot. And then I also went a second air race through the U.S. and down into the Caribbean with her in 77. Then I took a break from flying, had 3 babies. Now I'm back. I guess I'm at the end now.
I love it so much. You've never really known your life without an airplane in it.
I was very blessed. We grew up with a plane. My dad was a pilot. He was an attorney by profession, but he had a plane. My mother learned to fly in case something happened to him, because there were four kids in the family.
That's right. Yeah. She learned in case, she said, case I need to know what to do in case something happens to you.
Yeah, in case something happened to him, and she was in the front seat. She needed to know how to land the plane. And then all these guys were coming back from Vietnam, so the flight school had her switch to the right seat and start teaching all these Vietnam vets. And then she flew a race, and I flew back to commercially to meet her, and she put me in the plane, and she said, I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep. You fly. You hold this heading. Head west.
Head west.
Yeah. All my life, I'd been in the back seat, like, I hate to say it, but getting sick. And when I realized I needed to be in the front seat, I need to be flying the plane. I haven't gotten sick since then. You know,
I have never felt safer or more alive than when I was with you.
Oh.
And my dear friend, Tracy Spradlin, we went up in a plane with you. And people said to me, were you afraid? Because this was a tiny plane. I have never felt safer. I just loved
it. That's wonderful. And for those of you that don't remember, Angel Flight Central had an event where they invited media and medical personnel and invited them to go on a simulated Angel Flight down out of downtown airport. And Dana announced on the radio she was never going to fly in a small plane. And I sent a message to the station and said, she just needs a woman pilot. And lo and behold, I showed up and they said, you're flying Dana.
Do you know what else, Janae? And I, this is one of the things I remember is A, how safe I felt, how exhilarating it was, but how easy it is to understand the way our city is laid out. I remember you saying, look, right there is Worlds of Fun. And then look right over here, there's Kauffman.
Yeah.
It's just different. Life is different from the air.
Right. Everything's nice and clean and laid out.
What has flying given you?
Oh, it's given me wonderful, wonderful memories and wonderful things I've been able to contribute in giving, like, flights to kids that have never been able to fly, do angel flights, all sorts of stuff. It's wonderful. And, of course, racing. You know, there are some of us that are competitive. You are in golf. I know that.
Yeah. But you are competitive. So what happens when and if you win, and how many have you won?
I've placed in the top 10 twice.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at an air race. It's kind of like a marathon. Not everybody can do a marathon. Those that enter, do they plan to be first? Probably not. But just the fact that you finished an event that's so huge is amazing in itself. So those 100 women that will finish that, it's just something that like 99.999% of the women in the world have never been able to do.
You remind everybody the rules, because you can't just go flying willy-nilly any way you want, and they are tracking you every leg of the way.
Right. They do put trackers in our planes, unlike the olden days where they literally had ham radio operators radioing across the country who was where.
I see her.
Yeah. So they literally put trackers in our planes, and they watch, and they can tell who, if we're violating any airspace, because there's a whole lot of special use airspace now, you know, military areas. And of course there's temporary flight restrictions. Like right now there's restrictions all over Kansas City due to World Cup.
Don't put a drone up
do not put a drone up right now. And then also they have put equipment at all of these airports where we can stop that are recording everything we say. So they know if we're using proper radio phraseology,
okay,
if we're making the proper radio calls.
You have to have proper check-in. You have to check in at different check-in spots.
Yes. You have to call in 10 miles out, 5 miles out, 2 miles out, and then you position your plane. You're actually flying across the timing line full throttle at about 200 to 400 feet. So we have to get FAA waivers. All this weekend, we will be in briefings, FAA briefings, race briefings, because we get special waivers, because technically you just can't do that. Go around full throttle over airports, just wherever.
Half of the teams are sponsored by colleges and universities to give young female pilots extensive experience flying around the country. It is phenomenal.
That is correct. I know people will find this hard to believe. You can become a commercial pilot and never have flown more than like 300 miles from home. So these girls that have planned and executed a race and flying, well, the race is 2,700 miles. You might fly 500 or 1,000 miles to get to the start of the race. So the airlines come and recruit these girls. They come at the beginning of the race. They come at the end of the race. They want to recruit these because they've got good experience literally traveling around the country.
And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about the roots of this race, because it is also something that's going to be of interest to our listeners with respect to the Amelia Earhart connection. The race actually traces its roots, you guys, back to the 1929 Women's Air Derby. That's the Powder Puff Derby, in which your mother took part.
Right.
In which Amelia Earhart and 19 other daring female pilots raced from Santa Monica, California to Cleveland, Ohio. And that began women's air racing in the United States.
Correct. Right. Men, they tried racing with the men didn't want women racing with them. And I'll tell you, they've tried through the years to have men and women racing. I raced in two U.S. air races that were men and women, and I don't think the men like getting beat by the women. That's
I love you.
I can remember a couple guys that entered were retired SR-71 flyers, which is like a spy plane. And my mother and I beat them in an old beat-up aircraft just because we flew smarter than they did.
You don't necessarily have the fanciest equipment, right?
No. You just have to fly very smart. Pick your day, your time of day, your altitude, and so on to fly.
913-586-7798 if you would like to text in questions. And when we come back, we're going to give you the website so that, once again, our listeners can follow you as you race. We are back with much more with Janae Willerth straight ahead. Stick with us. So the website is airraceclassic.org, airraceclassic.org. So many of you follow Janae and the team the last time you participated in this. Remind everybody the name of your team because
I'm team number 31.
Can you grab her mic, Sam? When you take off, if our listeners go to airraceclassic.org,
you're going to go down the page, and yep, you're going to see map progress. That's going to be showing our trackers during the race.
Yeah.
And I'm team 31, Shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
Yes, I've been Shenanigans the last several races, and I've gotten good positive feedback on Shenanigans. So I'm still Shenanigans. We've even got some lucky arrow shirts that were given to us to wear during the shirt because it's kind of Irish. But we will take off 30 seconds apart.
So a week from today.
Yeah, a week from today. So 31, that means like 15 and a half minutes after the first plane starts their engine, we'll be starting our engine and taking off. They take off in groups of five. They start them up, and you're sitting there waiting, thinking, is my engine going to start? Because if it doesn't start, you go to the end of the line,
right,
you know, and you're sitting there. So they start five planes, they taxi out. They start the next five planes, they taxi out. So everybody doesn't have to sit there with their plane running the whole time.
Right.
So I'll be about 15 to 16 minutes in from when they start.
And the people that take off first have that time subtracted so that it's
right,
even.
Every individual plane is, they're individually timed. So they know they're all 15 minutes apart and they're individually timed at every stopping point, every crossover point.
Yep. So what do you do when you have to go to the bathroom?
Well, that's an interesting question. My partners and I have worked it out so that we take salty food and you just take little sips of water every half hour, and
yep,
a half an hour before you land, you chug it down so that when you hit the ground, you run for the bathroom, empty it out, and then you do the whole deal all over again. So there are some racers that will wear diapers or take
gotta do what you gotta do.
Lady Johns with them or
yep,
whatever. But yeah, there's no bathroom in the airplane. No bathroom.
It's tiny.
And we have all the vents closed, so it's hot. We'll take frog togs and put them because you don't want anything to disrupt the airflow of the plane. You want it to be as fast as possible.
You brought an emergency kit today. What's that for?
Oh, yeah. Every plane is required to have an emergency kit.
It's inside, you guys, of a water bottle. Think of
like a
soccer.
Yeah, big water bottle, but I take other stuff, too. We're required to take fire starting equipment, water purification tablets. I always take a huge space blanket because if we would go down somewhere, it can be like a huge mirror to reflect and people could find you.
Oh, sure.
Even though you got the tracker in there. It was especially important when we went like across Canada because there's like no airports anywhere. Lots of water, no airports. But we have to carry these. So we carry the usual stuff. You can see what's actually in here. You know, we'll take flashlights and whistles and ropes and cordage and the space blankets.
You've been doing this for such a long time. Have you ever had any close calls?
It's interesting because 50 years ago, we didn't even take emergency kits. We flew to the Caribbean.
Just got in and flew.
Oh, we didn't take life jackets. We didn't even take life jackets because you try to be as lightweight as possible. As a matter of fact, we will ship our luggage ahead to the end of the race.
Yeah.
And all we'll take is a backpack with our headsets, and we take our tablets and our maps and the rules and that sort of
That's
stuff.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to be minimal on the weight, and we'll calculate our fuel. So if I stop and we're going to just stop at the next stop, I don't even fill it with fuel. We offload fuel. Now, we all have to start with full fuel because all the planes take significantly more at full throttle than they do for normal flight planning, for a normal student that was, you know, taking lessons or something.
Do you think when Amelia Earhart disappeared, her co-pilot miscalculated the fuel? Is that what you think happened?
I have no idea, but I know the race is going to go by. We were to stop at Atchison this year.
Yeah, good.
Except they did not get their runway put in. They decided to put in a new runway 4 years ago, and it's still not in. So we will be flying over Atchison and timing and then landing at St. Joe. So one race stopped at Atchison. I went to the home of Amelia Earhart, and I thought, I'm going to lay in her bed. And then I thought, no, I don't want her luck. I'm not going to lay in her bed. That's
you crack me
you
up.
You know, I mean, do I want the luck of Amelia Earhart? Not really.
Tell me about Angel Flight. It's just the loveliest organization that until a few years ago, I had no idea that it existed. And then it brought you into my life.
Oh, yes. So Angel Flight Central is the one here in the Midwest. And they provide transportation. If someone has a medical issue that cannot be addressed in Kansas City or at their hometown, and they say need to get to Mayo Clinic or they need to get down to MD Anderson or something, we have volunteer pilots that volunteer and take these people and their families to take that burden off them so that they can have access to medical care. And so a shout out to Brendan and Jenna and Natalie, because they're all listening. Everybody in Angel Flight's listening too.
Yeah, I love them.
Because they love
you. I love them.
They love
you. I love them.
Yes, yes.
And so you have given these flights, you donate the time,
right,
the fuel,
and the plane.
And
right.
the plane, and then you might not do the entire leg. You sometimes
Correct.
Take an ill child and her
right.
mother or father
right.
part of the way, and then you meet another pilot, say, in Iowa.
Exactly. So somebody going up to, you know, say down to MD Anderson, I might take somebody to Arkansas, another pilot will pick them up and take them down to Houston, or I'll trade off people in Iowa going up to Mayo Clinic or whatever. And they publish these lists. If you want to be if you're a pilot, want to be a volunteer, we have actually 240 volunteer pilots. We have flown 53,000 flights for Angel Flight. Over 17 million miles have been flown flying patients for Angel Flight. They send out the lists every week, and I can look, and it tells you what the passengers are and how much they weigh and how far it is, because your plane may be able to accommodate a wheelchair and somebody else's might not, or you can have a baby seat and somebody might not, or somebody's got oxygen, they have to stay low, or whatever. We get
it's
lots
so
of
lovely.
Different things.
One of the things I'll never forget when I had the opportunity to go up in the air with you is that you had a flip book, a scrapbook of every child that
yes.
you have helped in need Fine. Of care. It makes right. me cry just thinking about it.
Yeah. And the way I got started is my dad was a Shriner, and Shriners put in hospital. Everybody thinks of them as clowns and circuses, but they actually have a string of children's hospitals. And my dad, anytime night or day, he'd get a call and some kid was burned and he needed to fly him down to Galveston, or some kid was in an accident or born with birth defects and he had to fly him up to the Shriner Hospital in St. Louis or whatever. And I started doing those flights with him. And then it's sad to say a lot of the Shriners have died off. And Angel Flight was formed 30 years ago and picked up a bunch of those flights. So Dad and I flew with him for the Shrine, and then we started doing Angel Flights together. And then we got to the point where he went as my co-pilot, and then he got to the point where he could not fly anymore, and I took his plane and did some. He had a twin that had a seat that folded down for a stretcher.
Of course.
And so he would take probably a nurse and a patient that was either in a cast or something, and he could take them. Now, Angel Flight, you have to be mobile as a passenger. You have to be able to get in and out of the plane, because we don't take nurses
critically
or medical.
Ill.
No, we don't take critically ill. We take people like to routine chemo or appointments that they know ahead of time what they've got.
If you have questions for our guest, Janae Wither, I just love you. You can text them to Sam at 913-586-7798. Stick around one more segment.
Sure.
Okay, back with much more with our guest here on Dana and Park. Straight ahead. Stick with us. The Air Race Classic is back, and you too can follow along with our local favorite pilot at airraceclassic.org. airraceclassic.org. We will remind you, Sam, we got to put this on the calendar. It is a week from today. You'll remind me. I'll get a text you because I want our listeners to follow along. Team number 31, Shenanigans. And who is your co-pilot this year?
My co-pilot is Julia Rue. She's a local flight instructor. Mm-hmm. Now, some of you may remember Emmy. Emmy Dillon has been my partner the last two races. And she actually came on the show. Her boyfriend whisked her away to New Zealand in a French helicopter, went to the top of a mountain, and they eloped. And she's now flying Boeing 777s and flying a B-25 on the weekends.
Yeah.
So she is no longer available to race. So Julia and I knew each other from flying. She's she's like a Greek goddess. She owned a Pilates studio here in town, and she's an instructor, and she's going to go with me and race, so we should have an exciting time.
How much time and what does it cost to get certified to be able to do, not what you do, no one is going to reach that level, don't even try, you're a legend here in town, but just for someone who is a pilot enthusiast, wants to learn how, what does that entail?
Well, technically you need 40 hours of flight time. Very few people do it in 40 hours, more like 70 to 80 hours. We have a lot of special use airspace around here. We've got Whiteman Air Base. We've got Kansas City International. Yeah. We've got there's lots more rules now than say when I learned to fly. When I learned to fly, basically my mother said, the examiner is pretty fat. If you can get over the fence at his airfield, you're going to pass your test. And so
do you look back and just
specific.
Go, what the hell were we doing?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was crazy. Crazy. I would get in the plane and she'd say, go fly to Sioux City. You got to do a thing called a cross country. And I'd get in the plane and fly to Sioux City, go up in the tower, and they'd sign my logbook. Of course, now you cannot go in a federal facility for anything, you know, without prior permission and everything. But to become a private pilot, you need to be at least 17. You need to make sure you're in good medical shape. You need to have what's called a medical to make sure you're okay. There's certain things they don't want pilots up there. If you've got ADHD, they don't want you as a pilot.
Worst pilot, but I was a damn good co-pilot.
You were very good co-pilot. Yes, Dana live streamed the whole time that she was in the plane with me. And then you learned solo, which is taking the plane by yourself. Then you start doing what's called a cross country, where you go more than 50 nautical miles, and then you have to do some flying at night. So you get training in a lot of areas, and then you take a test. They do have a new certificate now called a light sports certificate that does not take quite as many hours, and it's in a plane that's a little less powerful.
Can you rent one, or do you have to own one?
Oh yeah, most people rent them. It's very expensive just to go out and buy your own plane, unless you can write it off for a business or something. So there's a lot of flight schools around Kansas City at all the airports, you know, downtown, Lee Summit, out at New Century, out at Johnson County. There's, you know, flight schools. Call them up, meet the instructors, you know, talk to them about the costs. And
you have done 280 charity flights.
Oh, that's
280
true.
Charity flights. You sat in, Casey Current game last year?
Casey Current game's legacy seat. It was a not on my bingo card moment, let me tell you, when they contacted me and said, we're going to put you in the legacy seat. And I said, me?
What
in the heck for? And they said, well, and I've done at that time 250, you know, given charity flights, giving kids their first rides, doing a lot of angel flights.
How many people do you think you've taught to fly?
I don't know how many people I've flown with. I've flown with a lot of people, a lot of pilots, a lot of kids, a lot of patients.
But get certified, I mean, it's got to be hundreds.
Oh, I've probably flown with that many.
Yeah.
I've got a couple thousand hours of what's called dual instruction, where you're in a plane with someone else. I do mostly advanced instruction now. If I do it, I do more.
She will not
flying.
Teach you, by the way. Do not call. You said I've been there, done that.
I do mostly private owners now with more advanced equipment. I have upgraded my plane to be all digital. I've got equipment for racing. Literally, my plane, I've got probes on every cylinder. I know every exhaust gas temperature of every cylinder. I know the cylinder head temperatures. I know exactly my instantaneous gas because I've upgraded it for racing, and I've gone all digital and touchscreen, you know, that type of thing. Whereas a lot of the planes that are training are still training in older equipment.
You brought oxygen in. Tell me what that's for.
Okay, yes. I had never really flown with oxygen before, and I have a son in Denver, and when we go to visit him, you need to go in about 10,000 feet to get into Denver. So I decided, well, as I'm getting older, I've read it, oxygen helps you if you're above 8,000 feet. So I bought an oxygen system. They now have concentrators, so you don't have to have these big tanks. In the olden days, we had these big tanks, and you would have to pay to have them filled up, and you were very sparing with the oxygen because you didn't want to use up all your oxygen in case you needed it. But the concentrators now, will create it from the air that's there. So this little box, which is about 6 pounds.
It's a tiny lunchbox. Think of a tiny lunchbox.
And I will plug it into my panel. I've got a 28 volt adapter, and it will actually create oxygen for me up to like 14,000 feet. And if you're actually listening, you'll see people with these at Walmart.
Yeah.
Carting them around, you know. You have to have a medical prescription, but there's a company called Windblade, and he deals with strictly pilots. And if you can prove you're a pilot, he can sell you one without a prescription because they're so useful in the cockpit because they make their own oxygen. So we're going to take this time. And I've used it a couple times going into Denver. And like in the race, I'll probably fly 25 to 30 hours total over a couple days. And if I'm tired, boy, taking the oxygen, it just like perks you up.
Yeah.
It's amazing. When I land in Denver, having used oxygen, it's like, oh, I'm awake. Usually I'm shot, you know, because you've been flying at a higher altitude. So it's just a real great thing to have on board. So we're going to take it this year. And the guy that sold me this is out of Nashville. He said he's going to come to one of the stops and see me. So Tom, if you're listening, hopefully we'll see you there.
Shout out, Tom. The website is airraceclassic.org. And how long do you fly? How long does this take?
We'll probably be in the actual race like 20 to 25 hours because a lot of it will be time, but a lot of it will be you've flown and then you have to go up and cool your plane down and wait for everybody else to do their flybys. So you add probably 45 minutes to each stop coming and going. So we'll probably fly 25 to 30 hours over those couple days.
You are one of the most interesting women I have ever met. And I have met a lot of women in my career. I just love everything about this and your work with Angel Flight and your work with the Powder Puff Racing and now the Air Race Classic. If people want to get involved or support any of these ventures, how do they find you?
Okay, you can call me direct. I am on Facebook and on LinkedIn and all that stuff. But Angel Flight Central has ground volunteers. If you would like to volunteer, if you're not a pilot, you can still participate in the Young Eagles, which is flying kids. There are volunteers on the ground that do that also. And for all of the charities, we have a Challenge Air where we fly families with challenged children once a year down at Downtown Airport. It's in September. We need lots of ground volunteers for that. So even if you're not a pilot, I would suggest if you haven't volunteered, do it once.
So
that's what I did. And then
joyful.
You want to do it again. And then you want to do it again. And then all of a sudden somebody calls you up and said, hey, you've done 250 of these.
Remind me, with the special needs flights, you mentioned this to me a while back ago. It's to get kids more acclimated to the air, to understand like this is what flying is. It could be if you have a special need, maybe someone with autism, like this is what this is.
Right. It's to broaden their horizons because they've kind of been told all their life they can't do everything.
Yeah.
But they can get up and we actually let them fly the plane if they are capable of doing that.
Yeah.
So we take off and we'll go up there and I'll say, here, this is how you turn. This is how you climb. And the controllers know we may be kind of wonky around the pattern, you know, and everything. But we'll fly them over Worlds of Fun. They recognize Worlds of Fun. They recognize, you know, the Royal Stadium. And they have a parent with them. The parent or guardian will be in the back seat. So
it's just joy. It is absolute joy.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very exciting. And the parents, some of them come back year after year and they say, my child looks forward to this because this is the one place they're treated like a normal person. You know, let's get in the plane, go for an airplane ride.
And they can find that through the Angel Flight website?
That's Challenge Air. Challenge Air flies the children with disabilities. Angel Flight is for medical and humanitarian. Like in Minnesota, they fly breast milk or they fly for different.
Or they asked you to fly a colon at one point.
Yeah, one time I was looking and it said, fly an inflatable colon. And I called them up and I'm like, what? And they said, we need to get this inflatable colon from Jeff City down to Springfield where it's for a health fair or something. And I'm like, I don't know what an inflatable colon is, but will it fit in my plane?
You'll know when you see it.
Is it going to inflate in my plane? Like, you know, you hear about life raft. Somebody inflates a life raft in the plane. And I'm like, anyway, we ended up talking and they decided to drive it down there. But I don't know if you've ever seen an inflatable colon, if you can walk through it, or I don't know if it's like a bouncy house that you got tunnels.
It's pink and it does look like a bouncy house.
Yeah. But anyway, it was for a health humanitarian reason.
One of your 280 charity flights. Our guest this hour, thank you so much for joining us again, Janae Willarth. The website, airraceclassic.org. We will post this the night before you take off.
Oh, thank you.
We will post it the morning of, and all you do is scroll down, look for number 31, Team Shenanigans, and we will follow you on your journey. I wish you so much success.
And remember, Always live on the edge, but land on the center line.
That's right. Live on the edge, land on the center line.
Yes.
Love you so much. We're back with more after this. Stick with us. She is one of my favorite human beings. And on the way out, Sam, she goes, and then did I tell you, I've got to go teach a class. I'm teaching a class called How to Fly into Oshkosh and Not Kill Yourself. She goes, because it's really difficult flying into Oshkosh. If you don't know what you're doing, it's not going to end well.
She is a fireball.
Oh, my God. I love her so much.
Little bundle of energy. I love it.
Oh, I love her so much. Once again, the website is airraceclassic.org.
And her team name is?
Shenanigans.
That's right.
So funny.
If you want to hear the interview again, check it out on podcast.
Please. I've got so much stuff to tell you guys. Honestly. I've got so much to tell you guys. I don't even know where to start right now.
World Cup all day today. Yeah. I have a good news World Cup story for
Please
you.
Lay it on me.
So there were tons of fans at the Japan game. I think it was in New York.
Yeah.
I can't remember who they were playing, but there were tons of fans, and they were waving around what looked like kind of like the Steelers terror towel, wave around the yellow towels. Well, they had blue, what looked like towels or bags. Nobody could really tell. Maybe they were flags. Turns out they were bags. They were all trash bags. They were waving them around support of their team. And then as everybody was funneling out of the stadium,
they picked up trash.
The Japan fans opened up the trash bags and walked through the stadium, picking up all the trash that folks left behind.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. Bringing other cultures into the United States, because, you know, you've walked out of a Chiefs game before.
Or a movie theater.
Oh, well, the fact that it happens at movie theaters just boggles my mind. People dump their popcorn and leave it. But, you know, the peanut shells at the baseball game, beer cans in the cup holders.
I love that
story.
It
is a full force effort to try to clean up those stadiums after every single game. Japan fans come to New York and say,
on the way out, we'll take care of it.
We got it for you guys. Don't worry about it.
Here's another World Cup adjacent story. And Janae mentioned this, but it does bear repeating because there's going to be that one guy. You know it. There's going to be the one guy who thinks it's a good idea to put a drone up over a World Cup game. Let me tell you what is going to happen if you do that. The FBI is going to happen. The FBI is going to happen, and it is not going to end well for you. Not only is it illegal, they are warning the public, Kansas City, do not fly your drone in any restricted airspace during the World Cup. The fine is like $1 billion. Let's start with that. But it also comes with prison time. Multiple drones have been seized over the past week. Are you ready for this? As of today, the FBI and local law enforcement agencies detected drones flying in restricted areas 14 times. That means that 14 people are getting a knock on the door tonight, and when they come, they do not come quietly. Let me just tell you that. Man, you're not even going to know what happened.
You weren't kidding. Criminal fines up to $100,000. Civil penalties up to $75,000 and up to 1 year in federal prison.
$100,000. Of course, the restrictions are in place to protect fans, players, infrastructure. The FBI is working very closely with the FAA on this, as well as the Missouri State Highway Patrol. They are urging you, if you own one of these, if you have a teenager who owns one of these, please check for active flight restrictions.
Basically, if you are within 3.5 miles of any stadium on a game day, or within 1.1 miles of any fan festival or other associated event, they are banned.
Correct. $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite stories of the day. We've got a whole bunch of fun, iconic film props going up for auction again. And one of them is very, very much Kansas adjacent. From CBS News. Oh, where are my Star Wars people? A lightsaber immortalized in a pivotal scene from George Lucas's Star Wars saga is among the fixtures of an upcoming auction focused on Hollywood memorabilia. It is a massive Hollywood and entertainment signature auction, which will give really all of us pop culture enthusiasts the opportunity to bid on numerous props from iconic films, including the lightsaber I mentioned, costume hats worn by the stars of The Wizard of Oz, Willy Wonka, hoverboards from Back to the Future 2, rugs from The Big Lebowski, boxing boots from Rocky.
I need one of those hoverboards.
Oh, yeah. A drafted screenplay of The Godfather sequel. John Lennon's handwritten lyrics for If I Fell, written on the back of a Valentine card while he was in New York for the Beatles' first appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show.
Huh.
That auction ends tomorrow, July 13th to July 17th. July 13th to July 17th. By the way, the lightsaber has never been auctioned before. Would you like to guess the opening bid for the lightsaber? And this is the one that was used by Mark Hamill.
I mean, it's got to be over $100,000.
It was a custom design prop specifically designed for actor Mark Hamill, and you are nowhere even close.
$500,000?
To the opening bid. Try again.
I'm way low, I'm assuming. $1.3 million.
Bidding on the lightsaber, which has never been auctioned before, will open at $1 million.
Wow.
It is the one that was used in the scene where Darth Vader declares, "I am your father."
Which was actually, that specific phrase was never said.
It also comes with the severed hand effects prop. For the hat worn by the Wicked Witch of the West in 1939 Wizard of Oz, bidding will start at $100,000.
Are those ruby red slippers up for auction?
Those were already stolen.
Yeah, the museum.
For the Willy Wonka hat, $50,000.
What is the one movie prop that you could not live without? If money was no object, it goes up for auction, you're putting all the money on...
Oh.
What?
Bruce, the Jaws shark.
Yeah.
I would build a museum for it.
I believe
it's hanging in the SAG-AFTRA offices, Dan. I think the Bruce shark is in the SAG-AFTRA. I'd have to look it up. It's hanging from a ceiling somewhere. We might entertain some of your thoughts on that when we get back. I love the whole movie prop discussion. Like, for some of you, it's going to be the hat in...
Indiana Jones.
Thank you. But for others, like, is it the ruby slippers?
Whip?
Like, what is it? Is it the whip? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll have time.
I always loved the shoes from Back to the Future, not the hoverboard, but the Nike
Just
Maxes.
Nike.
Those were sick.
I'm pretty sure that might be included. Something Bruce? With Nike is included in this, and we'll talk about it when we get back.
Okay.
Bruce is at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures.
It would be very hard to fit that in a bedroom.
Still 100 pounds.
Super fake.
Shut up, Sam. 513-586-7798. We're back with much more on Dana and Parks straight ahead. Stick with us.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.